Welcome back to Reflections, your host Jorge Gonzalez. And at the end of the first segment, I was mentioning this Sanchez Valle case, and it rankles me that cited as erroneously as deciding that Puerto Rico is a colony or it doesn't have sovereignty, and languages to that effect that it's just clearly wrong. And I was mentioning each case has a holding, a decision based on particular facts and then the legal issue at hand. And then there's different statements that are made within the case that are dicta, which are important and can sort of lead you to where the court would be headed if the issue at hand were different. And in this regard, the Sanchez Valle case, what was involved was the application of the double jeopardy doctrine, and in the states, the states have been held to have separate prosecutorial sovereignty with respect to the rights of the government, the state government, to go ahead and prosecute someone, even though for a particular crime, even though the federal government, you know, has already declared that person guilty under similar, you know, federal law. So it's a double jeopardy clause, and it's been decided that for purpose of double jeopardy, if you were found, like in this case, it was undercover officers who sold, you know, illegal guns, and so this Sanchez Valle and Jaime Gomez Vasquez were indicted for that. And the federal government had laws similar for that and the local law. So if it was in the state and the U.S., which is what happened here, declared guilty for trafficking in the gun trafficking statutes, a state could not then bring under their gun illegal use of guns and all, could not bring a criminal action, an indictment, and so that was the issue, whether Puerto Rico was a state for double jeopardy for prosecutorial sovereignty, and so it's a very limited thing, and it kind of goes both ways. If in this case, if Puerto Rico had brought a case for the arms, you know, illegal arms trafficking, and declared guilty Sanchez Valle and Jaime Gomez, based on the decision, the federal government could not then indict them because on the holding, since the prosecutorial power derived, you know, from the same source, congressional source, then it would be double jeopardy. So that was the case. I mean, those were the facts, and that was the issue. And it was clear that the court was not determining Puerto Rico's sovereignty other than this prosecutorial sovereignty. And it says, for example, in the syllabus, and this is just a summary, it says the court does not examine the extent of control one prosecuting entity wields over the other, the degree to which an entity exercises self-governance, or a government's more particular abilities to enact and enforce its own criminal laws. So, you know, that Puerto Rico can force its put on new laws. That is, it's the criminal laws that we have are determined by us, and the Congress and the U.S. has never shot down as one of our criminal laws. So we have, but even in the criminal area, there's a heck of a lot of sovereignty that we have in self-government. And then it goes on. There are eight citations, which basically reiterate, and it's and eight times during the decision. But in the syllabus, it says, in the mid 20th century, Puerto Rico became a new kind of political entity, still closely associated with the United States, but governed in accordance with and exercising self-rule through a popular ratified constitution. And then it says it again, and this is the syllabus, the second time it says, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, a new political entity came into being, you know, in 1952. And then this is the third, and this is the summary. This is a 3-page summary of the decision. It says, those constitutional developments were of great significance and indeed made Puerto Rico, in quote, sovereign in one commonly understood sense of that term. At that point, Congress granted Puerto Rico a degree of autonomy comparable to that possessed by the states. If the dual sovereignty doctrine hinged on measuring an entity's self-governance, the emergence of Commonwealth would have resulted as well in the capacity to bring the kind of successive prosecutions attempted here. Three pages. That's a 3-page syllabus is the summary. That without reading the case, anybody can just read that and say, you cannot say that the court determined that Puerto Rico didn't have sovereignty. And then it went on, and if you go into the case, the number one here, I'm not going to go through all of them because it would be, but it says, in the ensuing 100-plus years, the United States and Puerto Rico have forged a unique political relationship built on the island's evolution into a constitutional democracy exercising local self-rule. I mean, you know, that's number two. These are citations from the court, I mean, in this case. The Puerto Rico Constitution created a new political entity. The Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, or in Spanish, Estado Libre Asociado de Puerto Rico, like the U.S. Constitution, it divides political power into three branches, the legislative, judicial, and executive. And again, resonant of American founding principles, the Puerto Rico Constitution describes a tripartite government as Republican in form and subordinate to the sovereignty of the people of Puerto Rico. The subordination of sovereignty is not to the U.S., it's to the people of Puerto Rico. That's real self-government. That's real democracy. The Commonwealth's power, the Constitution proclaims, and emanates from the people and shall be exercised in accordance with their will within the terms of the compact agreed between the people of Puerto Rico and the United States. This is a footnote. It says, if the question is whether the events of 1950-52 Puerto Rico had authority to enact and enforce its own criminal laws, or slightly differently phrased, whether Congress then decided it should have such autonomy, the answer, all can and do agree, is yes. So even in the criminal area, where there's this double jeopardy thing, the court is saying Puerto Rico has sovereignty to develop its own criminal laws. Number four, following the 1952, Puerto Rico became a new kind of political entity, still closely associated with the United States, but governed in accordance with and exercised self-rule through a popular ratified constitution. That's the language that was quoted in the syllabus. It says, and yet the result we reach, given the legal test we apply, ends up the same. Puerto Rico today has a distinctive, indeed exceptional status as a self-governing commonwealth, but our approach is historical. So it keeps on, saying that there's sovereignty, self-government, and all. It says the constitutional, this is number five, once Congress approved the proposal subject to several important conditions accepted by the convention, the commonwealth, the new political entity, came into being. These constitutional developments were of great significance and indeed made Puerto Rico sovereign in one commonly understood sense of that term. As this Congress recognized, Congress in 52 relinquished its control over the Commonwealth's local affairs, granting Puerto Rico a measure of autonomy comparable to that possessed by the states. Does that sound like you've been listening, that Sanchez Valle says that Puerto Rico doesn't have sovereignty and it's a colony? Give me a break. And there's a number. Let me see. No, this one doesn't. It's not one of the numbers. I just have all kinds of underlines in this case. Petitioner urges in its support of his different view that Congress itself recognized a new constitution as a democratic manifestation of this people's will. Brief for petitioner too. But far from disputing that point, we readily acknowledge it to be so. The petitioner notes, Public Law 60 affirmed the principle governed by consent and offered the Puerto Rican public a compact, in quote, under which they could organize a government pursuant to the Constitution of their own adoption. And the Constitution that Congress approved, the position again underscores, declares that we, the people of Puerto Rico, create the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, a new political entity, republican in form, in which the people's will is sovereign over the government. With that consent, to language, Congress allowed the people of Puerto Rico, in petitioner's words, to begin a new chapter of democratic self-government. And finally, Puerto Rico boasts a relationship to the United States that has no parallel in our history. And since the events of the early 50s, an integral part of that association has been the Commonwealth's wide-ranging self-rule exercised under its own constitution. And as a result of that charter, Puerto Rico today can avail itself of a wide variety of futures. So that's the majority decision. There's a dissenting by Justice Breyer, to which Sotomayor joins, which is even more powerful in terms of the credence and status it gives to the Commonwealth. And then in the other case that's kind of cited as along with it is the one on the fiscal board, and again as if the Supreme Court has said that the fiscal board was the Congress's exercise of taking away all the sovereignty from Puerto Rico and itself, but that again what were the facts? What was the decision before the court in that case? The decision was whether the Congress should have been given the consent to the nominations of the members of the fiscal board. That was the issue, and it was whether in a specific section that whether these were federal these officials in the Promesa board were federal officials. That was the issue. It wasn't whether Commonwealth and sovereignty. It was whether these officials named under this law were U.S. officials that required the consent and approval by the Senate, and the decision, completely on that specific issue, is that these were not U.S. officials. They were local officials dealing with local laws. And they did not need the Senate approval and consent. It did not go in, and makes it clear, did not go into Puerto Rico's status. But Sotomayor, and there were a couple of concurring opinions. Sotomayor takes that opportunity in her dissenting opinion. It's not a dissenting; it's a concurring opinion. But it's a dissenting in the sense that it understood that. The court should have gone into the status situation and analyzed it completely along the lines of what Breyer did in the Sanchez Valle case with her joining him. The history of ALI and the United Nations and all kinds of citations to all kinds of legal opinions and articles, but at the end she says I'm in agreement that these officers are local and did not need federal thing, I end up concurring. So it says I am skeptical that the Constitution countenances this freewheeling exercise of control over the population that the federal government has explicitly agreed to recognize as operating under a government of their own choosing, pursuant to a constitution of their own choosing. Surely our founders have labored to attain such recognition of self-determination, would not view that same recognition with respect to Puerto Rico as a mere act of grace. Nevertheless, because these issues are not properly presented in this case, I reluctantly concur in the judgment. The issue was specific, whether the Senate had to approve the designations of these seven members of the fiscal board, the Promesa board, and even though she thought that it was a great opportunity to go into Puerto Rico's new status and its rights and all, on a specific issue, she concurred. I hope that kind of, helps you understand. And again, I do this not because, I'm gonna argue against anybody if they think that the Estado Libre Asociado, the Commonwealth, does not have the rights and the benefits that that we should have, or that we believe that the rights and benefits and responsibilities of statehood far more advantageous than the Commonwealth. Respectfully, I mean that's the particular right, or that that statehood is even more colony than Estado Libre says, the independence people would, and so they argue that we should be independent, or the ones that associated free state with the agreement we have to be an independent. All those are fine and respected and all, but I say please, don't cite things as gospel or as true that are just not true. I mean that's my only gripe, and this is reflections based on the July 25th day, Constitution Day, I'm sorry to you have to listen to them. I hope it was interesting. It is critical, as we go forward, and I think within my perspective of that we should we respect the other people's positions and not demean them and use adjectives that aren't necessary. I for statehood, annexation. Well, that's not the papal that republicano. No. I mean, statehood is a respected solution with its benefits and detriments, and you have the right to vow for it and want for it. And the same thing with the others. So that's my. It's not 2 cents. It's more than 2 cents. But I hope it was interesting, and it does relate to the particular period that we've just been celebrating, and to the kinds of articles that came coming out as Puerto Rico does not have sovereignty and Puerto Rico is a colony, and the U.S. Supreme Court has so decided. Wrong. Okay. So we ended up the second segment here. This is Jorge Gonzalez, your host in Reflections. We'll be right back. I'm going to get a little bit more into the philosophical area of loneliness. It's a Spanish article that's very interesting in terms of its many bars that it has and how that's good for, shown to be good for the population. So we'll go into that area when we come back after the pause. This is Jorge Gonzalez.